You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Feeling stuck in your job? Bank of America's The Academy for Consumer and Small Business helps you develop a long-term career path. Through peer mentorship, immersive programs, and a variety of clear and distinct paths, you can reach the next level in your career. Take your first steps toward a long-term career path at careers.bankofamerica.com. And now, on with the show.
Hi. Welcome to another edition of Between Two Ferns. I'm your host, Zach Galifianakis. And my guest today is President Barack Obama.
Good to be with you.
Where are you planning on building a presidential library, in Hawaii or your home country of Kenya? Because, I mean, both places seem like they would be...
Zach, that's a ridiculous question.
Well, you know, I mean, not to bring up the birth certificate thing, but you really never did really produce your real...
Where's your birth certificate? Why don't you show it to us right now?
I don't want to show anybody my birth certificate because it's embarrassing.
What's embarrassing about it?
My weight on it, it says that I was born 7 pounds, 800 ounces. You know what I would do if I were president, Mr. President? I would make same-sex divorce illegal, then see how bad they want it.
I think that's why you're not president, and that's a good thing.
You said if you had a son, you would not let him play football. What makes you think that he would want to play football? What if he was a nerd like you?
Do you think a woman like Michelle would marry a nerd? Why don't you ask her whether she thinks I'm a nerd?
Could I?
No, I'm not going to let her near you.
That was Zach Galifianakis interviewing President Barack Obama for his hilariously awkward talk show, Between Two Ferns. The very first episode of Between Two Ferns debuted on Funny or Die in 2008, and it has since become a viral sensation with the curmudgeonly Galifianakis muddling his way through painful and at times confrontational interviews with everyone from Hillary Clinton to Bradley Cooper. Between Two Ferns is the brainchild of Galifianakis and Ferns writer-director Scott Aukerman. Now the two have teamed up for Between Two Ferns the movie, a road comedy that offers a little more insight into Zach Galifianakis' beloved outsider and features some very, very funny cameos by just about every celebrity under the sun. It's available on Netflix this Friday, September 20th, and today Scott Aukerman joins me on the podcast to share how Between Two Ferns was born out of his and Zach's love of bad cable access programs and why the two ferns were so essential to the cheesy look of the show. He reveals how they convinced the leader of the free world to come on a tongue-in-cheek interview show, how they improvised their way through an entire movie, and what it was like for Scott to direct his hero, David Letterman. Plus, we celebrate the 10th year of Scott's own podcast, Comedy Bang Bang, coming up with Scott Aukerman in just a moment. Aukerman is the host of the hit podcast Comedy Bang Bang and a pioneer in podcasting, having co-founded the Earwolf Podcast Network. In 2008, he and his buddy Zach Galifianakis created Between Two Ferns, the hilarious series of celebrity interviews for Funny or Die, hosted by Zach and directed by Aukerman. Over the past decade, they've convinced everyone from Brad Pitt to Barack Obama to take a seat between the two famous ferns, for chats with the awkward and sometimes confrontational Galifianakis. Now they're taking their show on the road for Between Two Ferns the Movie, which Scott Aukerman wrote and directed. It comes out on Netflix Friday, September 20th. Scott, welcome. Or actually, I guess I should say thank you for having me, because we're at your studio. We're at Earwolf.
Well, you can welcome me and thank me. I mean, I'll take both.
Well, you came in the door as I got here, so I guess I could have welcomed you to your own office.
That's true. Yeah, I would have appreciated that. Just to clarify, we did not come in side by side simultaneously, because that would be very funny.
Yeah.
That did not happen.
I have to also congratulate you, because I guess
Wait, a thanks, a welcome, and a congratulations?
Well,
this is unprecedented.
I'm very cordial when I'm in someone else's office. So.
Okay, yeah. I hate to see how you treat me if I came to your place.
Well, I got to say, my place is not nearly this nice. I'm literally in an old funeral home, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, my studio is a closet in an old funeral home, although now it's all shrink's offices. But
oh, wow. Are there ghosts there? I guess that people have died elsewhere.
That's what I always assume.
Not a lot of people are dying in funeral homes.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're very usually few hauntings. Transported there.
I mean, there are some stories. For whatever reason, I've been told that there is a African-American carriage driver or something who wears overalls and a yellow shirt who people have seen late at night.
Who's a ghost?
Yes.
Or just a friendly neighbor.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Okay. And then there's something like supposedly there was a mayor of Pasadena who ran afoul of the mob and was walled up in the basement.
Wow. That's like one of those old creep show type.
Yeah, I don't know where the hell that came from.
We just have the ghosts of previous podcasts. So Tig Notaro, the ghost of Tig Notaro is here, the ghost of the Sklar brothers.
Oh, I love them. They married us, me and my wife.
Really?
Yeah, Randy and Jason.
So who married you and who married your wife? That must be an uncomfortable bed situation for the four of you.
Yeah, and very confusing. Just last October, we're coming up on a year now. They performed the ceremony. So,
wow.
Yeah, that was interesting for like my side of the family coming in from Texas, and there's like they're probably expecting some like Baptist minister or something,
right.
And there's
at least
like
just
two
one
twins.
Person.
Yeah. Well, I did want to congratulate you also on the 10th anniversary of Comedy Bang Bang. I think you've done something like 600 plus episodes now, right?
Yeah, 620, 40, somewhere around there.
Wow.
Yeah, including live episodes. We've probably done 800 or something, but yeah.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean,
thank you.
Somewhere along the way, I read something like, I guess the average podcast only lasts maybe 11 episodes.
But yeah, episodes.
Yeah, you know, no, yeah, they, before they burn out. So that's a huge accomplishment.
That's
to stick with
crazy
that.
To me that. People would only do 11 before they burn out. And that's the average?
Yeah.
That means people are getting tired 5 minutes into their first episode.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, wow. I got tired 5 minutes into my first episode.
I got tired 5 minutes into this one. Anyway, nice to have me.
By the way, I also did listen to the 10th anniversary show, which was
10 hours long. You listened to the entire thing or you turned it on and dipped out?
I've jumped in and out.
Oh, okay.
I'm still working on it.
Right.
Was that all one take? Surely not.
Oh, of course it was.
Really?
I said it was, so it was, right? There's no trickery in show business. No, that was a big, I don't want to say accomplishment, but it was a lot of effort for me to do because I didn't get the idea until maybe 2 weeks before it came out, and then I had to scramble. And basically it came about because we've had so many incredible guests on Comedy Bang Bang. From the early days of Paul F. Tompkins and John Hamm and Jessica St. Clair and Lennon Parham to now with the new guard, the Sean Distins and Carl Tartz and Ego Wodums, that I wanted to honor all of their achievements in the show and all of the incredible episodes that they've done. And so I wanted them all to be on the show, and I started thinking I would talk to each of them for 5 minutes, and everyone just kind of ended up improvising for a half hour.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to Taryn Killam, who's on the show, and he said, well, it should just be 10 hours because it's the 10th anniversary. And so that was 2 weeks out from the deadline, and I said, uh-oh, I have a lot of work to do. But yeah, it really came out well. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I didn't even know that you could do a 10-hour podcast. I would have thought that they cut you off at a certain point. Is that like a record?
We had to – actually, everyone here at Earwolf and Stitcher, the minute I said, hey, I think this is something I want to do, they mobilized and started trying to figure out exactly how technically it could be done.
Yeah.
And we found, ironically enough, the only place that could actually host the entire 10 uninterrupted hours was Stitcher, which is the company that we have here. Every other platform needed us to break it into two equal five-hour episodes. So most of the places you listen to it, it'll be part one and part two. But we literally did 10 hours on the dot. It's to the second.
Wow.
10 hours. and you can hear all of it uninterrupted on Stitcher.
God, I mean, that must have been nice for your employees. I mean, it's rare that you actually get to go into gold time on a podcast.
Right, yes. Overtime, yeah. Anyone who listened to it, they've taken care of all of their community service responsibilities if they're on parole.
Now, when you started Comedy Bang Bang 10 years ago, you were way ahead of the curve. I always think of Mark Maron as being like the old man of podcasting. I don't know, maybe it's because he's so curmudgeonly, but you guys started in the same year.
Yeah, we were before him, I believe.
Were you? No kidding.
Yeah. I will say that we were more inspired by Jimmy Pardo, who does the Never Not Funny podcast. Yeah. I believe he's been doing it for 13 years at this point.
Wow.
And I was on his show in the early days, and still am on his show. But doing his show on those early episodes made me kind of figure out what a podcast was and how big the audience was out there, and it inspired me to do my own. So, but 10 years, it's an insane amount of time.
Yeah. Now, when you jumped into it, did you have much faith in this fledgling medium?
Well, I mean, I was just a teenager. I didn't know what I was doing, you know. I thought, you know, I took a look at projections of where the audience was going to grow. We actually, in the early days, saw an article that said it was going to grow by 200% in the first couple of years, which is very encouraging. And we also saw some articles that said cars manufacturers would no longer be putting CD players and tape decks and they even said radios, although I still think every car has a radio. But they said, you know, they're only going to have the line in. You know, they didn't even know about Bluetooth at that point. But then Bluetooth was put into all cars, and it sort of took care of all of those problems. And then download speeds and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, we really saw the future, and it's what it is now, which is, you know, you can just stream a podcast instantaneously and play it in your car on the way to work, as opposed to when we started where you had to download it onto iTunes and then sync it up to your iPod and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we hoped that it would get to this point.
Yeah, you were way ahead of the curve. You were a pioneer. I mean, I've only been at this like less than 5 years.
So yeah, that's not
that's a big deal.
That's not an accomplishment. I am better than you. Yes.
You are better. Well, you built a whole podcast network.
Yeah, but at a certain point, you'll get to 10 years unless you grow bored like the average.
Yeah. And I wonder, how did you come up with the idea of mixing real guests with characters? And it's mostly your friends playing different characters, like the skiing hot dog and stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, when I first started the show, I thought it was going to be a little more of what Mark Maron, you mentioned him, the aforementioned Maron, a little more of what he does, which is interviewing comedians about comedy. And I think the first couple of episodes were sort of that, where I just had comedian friends on like Tom Lennon or Kevin Nealon or Sarah Silverman. And I just talked to them about their careers, you know. And then but I was also putting on a show every week at the UCB Theater here in L.A., and so that was a mixture of stand-up comedy and people doing characters and sketches. So I wanted to have some of those character pieces and some of those sketches on the show. And so around the 8th episode or the 10th episode, I remember I had a comedian, Andy Daly, on who had recorded his album at my show where he did 9 different characters. And I said, hey, what if you came on and did one of those characters? And I knew his bit really well. I'd seen it so many times. He'd recorded the album at my show. So I knew the questions to ask him to set him up to do the piece as he normally did it. But he's such an amazing improviser that I started throwing him sort of curveball questions. I remember he was talking about buying a really heavy coat and he was going to go commit suicide by walking into the ocean with his heavy coat on. And I knew the bit really well, but I started asking for a lot of details about where he bought the coat, the material the coat was made out of. And he was laughing along and was able to roll with it really well. And I remember leaving that show thinking like, oh, this is something. This is it's kind of akin to the Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner 2000-year-old man, you know, albums that I grew up on. And I thought this might be where the show ends up going. And that's eventually just what I steered into, is not only talking to comedians, but not really talking about their process or anything, having more of a joke conversation with them, and then having comedians on playing fake people. And the mixture of that is really interesting to me.
Now, I want to ask you about your pre-podcast life. You have this amazing Hollywood story, kind of like Freddie Prinze, where you got discovered overnight pretty
much.
Or
Prince.
Yeah.
Or Freddie Mercury. Really, any of the Freddies, the Princes. It kind of reads like it was a dream come true, but basically what you're talking about is that I started doing comedy in 1995, and I was very influenced by Bob Odenkirk and David Cross. They were doing live shows here in L.A. in order to get the HBO show Mr. Show that they did. And I had seen those and was very influenced by them, and I started doing comedy as a direct influence of that. And the second time that I did it, Bob Odenkirk happened to be in the back of the room, and after the show came up to my partner and I and said, "Hey, I really liked you guys. I need writers on my show, Mr. Show. Would you guys ever want to write for it?" And I'm like, "Oh, you're the guy who made me do this thing that I just did."
Wow.
But along with that, then, you know, it didn't come true for 3 years because he didn't have a slot open at that point.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, so I then just did comedy for 3 years, and he was very supportive. He would come to shows and be in them or introduce them sometimes or do stand-up before them. A very supportive guy, but I didn't actually get a job from him for another 3 years until the fourth season of Mr. Show.
Okay. So you were discovered overnight, but you weren't hired for 3 years.
Yeah, I made no money until then. There's really no point in being discovered until the checks start coming in.
And Mr. Show was just so damn groundbreaking. What did you learn about comedy?
That's strong language.
Well, sorry.
It's okay.
What are the rules here at Stitcher? What did you learn about comedy from Bob Odenkirk and David Cross?
I learned a lot. You know, there are a couple ways that really stick out to me right now. I think the first thing was they really taught me about the difference between saying something in your comedy and not saying something. So the difference between, for instance, parody or satire. And they fell on the satire end of the equation, where they felt like if you were just kind of making jokes and being silly, or, you know, making references to a movie that was out, it wasn't really for them. We would have really long discussions about what you wanted to say, why you got the idea, what your feelings about what you were writing about were, and why that was important. So that was really an important lesson to me that I've then since then tried to put not only in my writing work, but in shows that I produce. I'll usually talk to the creators about, you know, what are you trying to say? You know, what's your point of view? Stuff that I got hired when I was 9 years old on that show. I hadn't really thought about up till then. And then the other, I think more of a process question is just how to write effectively, I think, which can sort of be taken in a lot of different areas, even if you're not a writer, in a lot of different fields. Basically, Bob felt that anyone who spent their time laboring over something for days, if you wrote a sketch for 3 days, it was worthless because you had invested so much time into that 3 days. At that point, you loved the result. Like, you had so much of a stake in it that you were, like, very protective
some
over
cost fallacy.
So he would say, well, if you turned in something that you'd written for 3 days, he'd say, well, what am I going to do now? I'm going to critique it, and you're going to get your feelings hurt. Because you've spent so much time on this. He goes, instead, write it for 2 hours and come in here, and then we can, like, start to make it good.
Yeah.
So that was – at that point, I kind of had thought of myself as a writer – that I was like a craftsman And I was sitting there tinkering with word choice and, you know, finally coming up with the thing that was good. And comedy is not really about that. Comedy essentially is really stupid and dumb and silly and fun. And so, and since then, especially in Comedy Bang Bang with the improv stuff, it's like just first thoughts come out and do it and don't labor over it. And that was a really important lesson because at that point, not only are you having more fun and being more silly, but you're also spending a third of the time working on something, which is very important.
Yeah. Yeah. And you won an Emmy for Mr. Show, right?
I did not. I was nominated for an Emmy for that.
Nominated.
And then I won two for Between Two Ferns.
Okay. That's right. That's right. But, I mean, Mr. Show was a huge success for you. And then apparently you went through like this 10-year dry spell. After the after all the success with Mr.
But
Show.
Enough about my dating life. Ha, 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 ha.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, Scott, but, you know, usually you're supposed to pay your dues and then hit it big.
Right, yeah.
I think you kind of did it backwards.
It was the reverse. I hit it big, had a few great years, the golden years, as I call it, and then dry spell is maybe a little harsh in the sense of I was still getting paid
right.
A lot of
had
money.
Had a lot of development
every
deals
year.
And that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, so every year I would maybe write two film scripts and one television script that would never get made. So it was dry in the sense of, like, I went from working on a television show and then making a movie that was released to a 10-year period where really the only thing that ever came out was I did a year of work on the movie Shark Tale, the animated movie for DreamWorks. But along with that, I was writing a lot of scripts and would put, you know, it takes you about 3 months to write a film script sometimes, put a lot of work into it, and then a lot of them would almost get made, and then at the last second they would say no. I had a pilot at NBC that they said, okay, we're greenlighting this, and I started to ramp up for it, and then they called me a couple of days later and said, whoa, hold your horses. Don't get too excited about this. We're not doing it anymore. So that happened for about 10 years. And the only way to sort of keep my sanity was I put a lot of energy into doing the show Comedy Death Ray at the UCB Theater, on Tuesday nights, which ran for 10 years where I could just kind of have fun and not worry about that kind of stuff.
We're going to take a quick break and then I'll be back with more with Scott Aukerman when we come back in just a moment. This episode is brought to you by Invitae. You do all the right things to protect your health. You don't smoke, wear sunscreen, eat healthy meals, and you see your doctor for checkups. Still, you could be at increased risk for cancer because sometimes it's genetic. Take the next step to understand what's in your genes with Invitae, a genetic test that experts trust. Based on the results, you may be able to potentially lower your risk. Learn more by visiting Invitae.com. That's Invitae.com. And now, back to the show. You kind of, after a while, just decided to make your own thing. You start the podcast, you started doing, I think it was like, what, 2008 that you started Between Two Ferns?
It was 2008, yeah, so it's been 11 years at this point.
Yeah, how did you and Zach come up with the idea for the show?
Well, Zach and I, we've known each other since the 90s when I was, I think I was in pre-K at that point. And I met him at Largo, which is a local club here. And I thought he was really funny. And then I saw him at the Aspen Comedy Festival. And this must have been in 97. And I saw him at a bar and I came up to him and I was like, hey, I think I met you at Largo. I'm Scott. You're really funny. You're here for the festival, right? And he said, oh no. I wasn't invited to the festival. I started my own festival, which basically he had rented a hotel conference room on the outskirts of Aspen and was just doing shows there. Not encouraged or, as part of the actual festival. And I thought that was such a funny idea. So we checked in with each other every once in a while and would do stuff every once in a rare while, but it wasn't like we were working together constantly. So then I was doing a pilot for a late night sketch show, and I knew Zach was too popular to actually be a cast member on the show. But we had a really great cast of people with between Casey Wilson and Natasha Leggero and James Adomian, Paul Rust, so many great people on that show. But Zach at that point was a little more established than those people and couldn't commit to doing a full-time cast thing. But I called him and he was willing to do one sketch. So we hung out and we were kind of talking about, okay, what's the kind of thing you would want to do? And he said, you know, I've always wanted to do a talk show, like a public access thing, because he had a public access show growing up.
Yeah.
And he said, I wanted to be called Between Two Ferns. And he said that to me, and I got it because I had a public access show when I was in high school.
Really?
And I knew that when you're there, they don't have any kind of set dressing. They have
right.
a couple of chairs, a black curtain. Sometimes they'll have a sparkly curtain in case it's like a dance competition or something.
Yeah.
But to fill up the frame, because that can look very empty, they'll put just two giant plants next to you. And so that made me laugh really hard, and I got it immediately. I was like, Between Two Ferns, perfect, yeah. Let's do it. And I had also been talking to Michael Cera at the time, who wanted to do a sketch, and I said, hey, what if we all did this together? And so we just improvised it one day for about a couple hours in this basement that we were filming. And our editor, Dan Strange, to his credit, put it together and got all the really funny parts and made it seem like it was happening in real time, and chose the theme song and all that and the yeah. font and the editing style.
I love the font. I love how yeah. committed you guys are to the whole look of a cable access show.
Yeah, that was really...
That's like what, it's not even Chiron. It looks like the graphics that you did in camera on a camcorder
yes.
back in the day or something.
That every yeah. aspect of it is intentionally kind of lo-fi.
Yeah.
Like, not only do they not have the best equipment, but they haven't hired the best people to produce it as well. And so, yeah, we filmed it, and the show never went forward, and then we were sort of looking for a place to put it, and we knew people over who were working at Funny or Die, which was a new... website
right.
that really the landlord and maybe a Nick Thune video were the only things I think that were maybe
yeah.
out there that they
yeah.
had produced.
Will Ferrell's company.
Will
or
Ferrell,
outlet.
Yeah.
yeah.
And Adam McKay's. And so we called him and said, hey, are you interested in putting this up on your site at all? And they said, I think we could give you an exclusive on a Monday, which I think was in January, the beginning of January. They're like, I think yeah. you can have an exclusive on this one day. They were like sort of iffy about it. But to their credit, gave us nice placement on one day,
yeah.
and just a few million people saw it
yeah.
and started passing it around.
Yeah. Are you guys still using the original ferns?
Well, no, that would be impossible. But
because okay. I remember they were getting pretty peaked for a while.
Yeah, so we used the same ones, I believe, in the first five,
yeah.
and that was for some weird reason that well. One of the reasons is, you know, we're all show business people. We don't know where to buy ferns.
Yeah.
Like the day I remember I figured out that Home Depot sells them, you know, I don't know where plant stores or anything are in LA. Like, it's not something that I ever paid attention to when I was driving around. Then I figured out Home Depot would sell them, and I knew there was one by my house. So that kind of opened up things. But for the first five episodes, we had those same ferns. And I was renting the same chairs that we used on the pilot, and I was traveling out to Century City to rent them from a prop house for $80 every time. Like, choices that, in retrospect, were insane that no one cares about.
Yeah.
But you can slowly watch those ferns die throughout the first five episodes until Bradley Cooper finally
yeah.
Smacks Zach in the face for not watering them.
You never thought about plastic ferns?
You know, not even on the movie did we use plastic.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about okay. them being real that I think is yeah. important.
Now, up to a point, you were pretty much just doing celebrity interviews on the show, but then you land the President of the United States. How in the world did the Obama interview come together?
It was one of those things where I think it came together 6 years into his presidency. And for the first 6 years, we had been... I don't know, half jokingly, half serious kind
uh-huh.
of pursuing him. And the process in these is kind of It's a little difficult because people will string you along for a long time.
Sure.
And make you put in a lot of free work, you know? And there have been several times, and these are nice people, so it's not, you know, their fault or whatever, but I remember writing a lot of jokes for Elton John once and then finding out the next day he was no longer going to do it. Oprah Winfrey, I think Zach canceled a trip because we heard on a Thursday that she was going to film it on a Saturday at her home in Montecito. And it was going to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show itself on her comedy episode.
Oh, really? Wow.
And so Zach was going out of town, so he canceled plans, and we started getting together and planning it out and writing the jokes. And then I think we found out on Friday that no one had ever actually spoken to her about this plan. And they showed her one of the episodes, and she was like, I'm not going to do this. And it was canceled on a Friday, and so Zach was out of a trip. So stuff like that would happen all the time and still happens. So there was a time, I believe, when President Obama was up for re-election that they thought maybe this would be a cool thing to do in order to help him win re-election. Mm-hmm. And so we again started getting busy with it and started kind of planning what it would be. And then we heard, hey, he's not going to do it. He's going to do a Reddit Q&A instead.
Because those are so similar.
They're very similar. Yeah, I guess they just, both of those things got slotted into the things kids are into or yeah. something like that. So then a couple of years later, we had sort of taken it out of our minds and said, oh, this is never going to happen. And we heard from the campaign, it wasn't a campaign, but we heard from the White House, if it's ever going to happen, it's going to happen now, because he really wants people to hear about the Affordable Care Act. Mm-hmm. So at that point, we were, you know, five times bitten, you know, once shy, and we were like, yeah, okay, sure. doubtful that it'll ever happen, but we went ahead and started planning for it, and I started talking to one of his speech writers and people involved in the campaign. Mm-hmm. And it started to get kind of serious where it looked like it could happen. And I was filming my television show Comedy Bang Bang at the time, and I was in the middle of a season, and when I was filming that, I mean, it's very difficult to film that show due to all of the guest stars who were on it.
Yeah.
And I had a very busy week, the week that they said they wanted to do it. And I went to my line producer and I said, hey, if I had to not be here for a day, is there ever a day that I could not be here? And they're like, no, you're in every scene of the show. What are you talking about? And I said, yeah, but let's look at our schedule. And I had big guest stars on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of that week. But on Monday, I was just filming plot stuff. So I said, could I take that Monday off? Not even knowing if that was a day that they could do it. And they said, if you had to take one day off, that would be the day. So we went to the White House and we said, we can only do it on Monday. And
they don't get that a lot, probably.
They don't get that a lot. And I was just like, man, something's got to break. Either they're going to say, hey, forget it, or I'm going to, you know, have to cancel my show. And to their credit, they came back and said, yeah, Monday's good.
Wow.
No kidding. So we all went out to the White House, and I you know, again, sort of hearkening back to the Oprah Winfrey of the thing, when you talk to a person's representatives a lot, they have not spoken to the person involved.
Right.
90% of the time.
Right. He doesn't know what's on his schedule, probably.
So he doesn't know what's on his schedule. We kept thinking, like, he doesn't know what Between Two Ferns is. He's never heard of this. He doesn't know what he's in for. They had approved everything we were going to talk about, but we had no idea if he had approved it personally.
Oh, yeah.
But he walked into the room. After all of us saying, this is not happening, some national crisis is going to happen and this is canceled. But he walked in and he said, Two Ferns, and clapped. And we were like, this guy gets it. We found out much later that he had never heard of it and that he was having a family dinner the night before with his two kids. And they were listening to what he was supposed to do the next day, I'm sure bored out of their minds, you know, and he said, I'm supposed to do something called Two Ferns. And he thought it was called Two Ferns, not Between Two Ferns. And they lit up and they're like, oh my God, I love Between Two Ferns. You're going to do that. You have to do it. So Wow. He kind of came in because his daughters liked it with a little more passion for it than something that he had no idea what it was.
And it must have been intimidating directing the most powerful man in the world, I imagine.
Yeah, but I sized him up and I was like, I could take this guy if I really had to. No, it was intimidating, but when you get into this situation, and this happened on the movie a lot too, you're on a schedule that you have to hit, and you know the potential for what it could be, and you have that in your mind, and you just have to do a job. So it was very difficult to sort of circumnavigate the experience because of all of the restrictions on his time and what he would do or what he would not do. Supposedly we heard he would not do a second take. Which, you know, when you're doing these, quite often you have to do a second take, but they were, I think his people were approaching it sort of like we were a news organization. And so why would you ever do a second take of an interview? Right. And a lot of people don't know, when you do interviews, this is our fifth take. I mean, we have been screwing up for hours, and I think we're finally on a roll. Yeah. This is the one I want to use.
Yeah.
But so it was a little difficult, and I had to, at a certain point, I had to direct him and actually overcome that and ask for a second take and see what he said. And to his credit, he went ahead and did a second take and was into it, and it came out really well. So yeah, we're very proud of that one.
Well, you mentioned the Between Two Ferns movie that's coming out. What made you and Zach want to take this kind of cheaply produced spoof of a cable access show and turn it into a whole full-blown movie?
There were a few years back, we were doing a special for Comedy Central, which was a satire of the Barbara Walters pre-Oscar specials. They were having whatever defunct award show that they used to produce. I can't recall what it was, but they approached us about doing one of these pre-award show specials. So it was really fun. We went out to New York, and it was with Tina Fey and Jon Stewart and Richard Branson. And as part of it, those three were the people that we interviewed, but as part of it, we're just goofing around on the streets of New York, just improvising and filming stuff. And if we would get an idea, we would see a mailbox, and Zach would tap me on the shoulder and say, hey, film me. I'm going to go run into the mailbox and have my pants fall down around my ankles. And we were like, oh, okay, that sounds cool. And it was just, we were doing stuff like that. We would see one of the sandwich shops, a Subway. And he'd say, hey, let's go film me walking into that. And later we'll say that I went on New York's famous subway, you know. So stuff like that. And we were just like, wow, this is really fun to, you know, he had been making big Hollywood movies at that point. And he said, this is a really fun energy to have in making something. Because, you know, when you have a script and the cameras are set up really well, it can kind of drain the fun out of something a lot of times. So we said, if we should make a movie with that kind of energy, where there's not really a script and the camera setups aren't so oppressive that we can't goof around and improvise. So
the whole movie is improvised, or is it like Larry David does, where you kind of have a summary and you work off of that?
Yeah, that's usually what when you see something improvised, I kind of feel like it's more improvised than Curb Your Enthusiasm, because I did an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm,
I
was improvising during it, and the creators came up and basically said, hey, say this line exactly the way we want you to. And I was like, oh, okay. So I think ours is actually a little more loosely scripted than that. In fact, a Curb Your Enthusiasm, I think Larry David is a genius at constructing these elaborate plots. And we didn't really have much more than a bare bones plot. We wanted to record and film a bunch of scenes that we would then figure out how to put it together later, a lot like an actual documentary.
Right.
Which is, I was reading a lot about This Is Spinal Tap, which is a heavy influence on the movie.
That's
the same thing that they did, which is they just filmed it like it was actually happening. It was filmed like an actual documentary. Those guys got in character, they would set up scenes. And what a documentarian does is just film a lot of stuff and then figure out a structure later. And and that's the way that we decided to do it.
Weirdly, it almost reminded me of the Muppet movie, actually, where it's like, we got this many celebrity cameos. How do we make this work? Let's just figure it out.
There are two parts, especially in the movie, that are directly ripped off from the Muppet movie.
Oh, really?
One in the climax of the movie. And then I kept referencing a certain shot in the Muppet movie a lot. I'd go, no, we don't need – because when you're talking with your crew about what you need, a lot of times budgetary constraints are put on you. And we were like, how do we film a movie studio? And I was like, we don't need a movie studio. Look at the Muppet movie.
Yeah.
It's literally a sign, and it could be on any building. It just says Hollywood Movie Studio. So the Muppet movie actually was structurally a big influence. I think Albert Brooks's Real Life, it was a big, big influence, and I was constantly referring back to that. But then just, you know, I would take a look at any kind of movie that took something like this from Wayne's World to Borat, and really just started thinking about how simple those plots are, and what people are really interested in is funny scenes where people are having fun and goofing around.
Yeah, because in between the taped segments of the show, it's basically a road movie.
Yeah, so it's the plot is essentially that Zach has been doing his show for 10 years in North Carolina at a public access station, which he then destroys in a mishap with Matthew McConaughey. And Will Ferrell, who runs Funny or Die and has been putting up his videos for 10 years, promises to give Zach a late-night talk show if he'll get 10 more episodes. They can't do it in the studio anymore, so they have to go to the celebrities and record them wherever they can across the country, winding up in L.A. Yeah. after a couple of weeks. And if he does all of that, then he'll get his own late-night talk show.
Which sounds like it's basically what you guys did. You were talking about having to go to Oprah's house or the White House and stuff.
So that's exactly what it was. I mean, normally you have to go to a celebrity because a celebrity I found will travel approximately 1 mile radius outside of their place. So we would always have to go to them. So
this is why I came to you today.
Yes, thank you. I'm in our equation.
Yes,
I am a celebrity.
You are a huge celebrity. Yes.
To the public at large, no idea.
I know that I can't give away most of the cameos, and there are tons and tons of them. But
you can give away some.
I think that David Letterman we can talk about.
Yeah,
right?
We can talk about most people.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the trailer's out now.
And so
most of them have been revealed. But yeah, David Letterman is in there, which was a big, big thing for us. Not only just on a personal level, seeing the David Letterman show in 1984 was a big reason why I got interested in comedy. And to finally work with him and talk to him was a big thrill. But also just thematically for the movie, it ties into the theme of the movie and Zach's plot a lot. So I think it was really a coup when we got him to agree to be in the movie.
Yeah, he was kind of a role model of yours when you were doing cable access, right?
Yeah, I was directly ripping off his style.
Really?
When I had
top
my show.
10 and all that?
Yeah, not top 10 necessarily, but just his sarcasm and the way that he would take things that most television had treated very seriously and treated very sardonically.
Yeah. What's the deal with the beard? He has this like old
That's
West Minor beard. And
I don't know why we didn't ask him that.
I feel like everyone jokes about it, but no one's actually gotten to the it's like Charles Foster Kane's sled or something.
Get it in a way. Like I had my own television show for 5 years and I had to have my facial hair shaved exactly the same every single day.
Yeah.
And it's such a grind in a way to get up every I mean, it's something that look, from what I understand, it's difficult to be a woman. What with some of the challenges they go through, but we have to shave every day.
Yeah.
So it's pretty equal.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think he just got tired of it and was like, you know what? I no longer have a television show where I have to do this. Let's let it grow.
Well, I laughed so hard at Between Two Ferns.
Thank you.
Take eight. We made it all the way through the interview.
And then you got nervous.
Yeah. Between Two Ferns, the movie, is available on Netflix starting Friday, September 20th. And also subscribe to Scott's podcast, Comedy Bang Bang, wherever you like to listen. Scott, thanks for talking to me.
Thanks so much. And may the podcast gods smile upon your head.
Thank you. Thanks again to Scott Aukerman for coming on the show. Again, Between Two Ferns the movie comes out on Netflix beginning this Friday, September 20th. Subscribe to Scott's podcast, Comedy Bang Bang, on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Podcasts, and follow Scott on Twitter at Scott Aukerman. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com, and I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.